This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, come on. We call it the place to be.
Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
Do you actually need a camera for tout, or is it like part of the program?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself.
I was just kidding. The man you see and the place to be.
Do you listen at all when I speak on the show?
Party people in the place to be.
Yo, place to be is on my side, dude, because you don't want to be the target when I fly the coop.
Nah, place to be is on my side, dude, because you don't want to be the target when I fly the coop.
Place to Be Nation proudly presents a powerful pair of pro wrestling pundits. It's JT Rosero and Scott Criscolo, and this is the Place to Be podcast.
You're in the place to be, and if a sucker step up, then he's bound to get served when the three combine. Fresh is a word, and yo,
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here from the PTBN studios. Joining me, as always, is my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscolo. Scott, how are you, sir?
JR, good morning, afternoon, and evening. Welcome to 647 of the longest-running episodic motherfucking gold extended. 53 to 7 bills. It is March. We're waiting for the spring, JR, because then spring means summer. Summer means St. Mary's. Can it just happen now?
I'm ready for March Madness to be. I'm boycotting this year after this bullshit with the tournament and all this nonsense. Big East getting screwed. I'm out. Not doing a bracket.
But you know what? At least your team manned up and is playing in the NIT. I don't even think Patino voted his kids. I think he just said fuck off. I think Providence could win the NIT, to be honest with you. I think every Big East team can go to the Final Four of the NIT. To be honest, I think they're better than everybody else in the field. Seton Hall,
Georgetown, and DePaul get their shit together. All these losses, all these wins wouldn't be worth less than they are. So maybe that we need that to at least happen. Well, I'll be fine if Georgetown does it. DePaul can get better. Georgetown can stay winless for all your shit.
Yeah. But. Well, you're gonna have to get over it.
All right. Well, listen. Welcome in. If you're watching us, hello. For those only listening, we are simulcast on video on the North South Connection YouTube channel. You can go there, check it out. We have all kinds of crazy WrestleMania stuff going on. Constant WrestleMania content. Ryan Gray and I are ranking every WrestleMania match ever 402-1 in short format. They're all 60 seconds or less on TikTok, YouTube Shorts, Facebook Reels, Instagram. Ryan's also heading up a project where he's counting down the 40 greatest WrestleMania performers of all time, which I know my co-host here, and I believe our guest tonight is also maybe doing one of those. I don't know for sure. Ryan keeps everything under wraps, but we know our PIC, Mr. Scott, will be on that. So check those out. And of course, like we always do leading up to WrestleMania, we'll also be previewing all the matches on the card. So a lot of excitement at WrestleMania season at the North-South Connection. And of course, a lot of great content on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network as well. So if you're just watching and you're new to that, check that out and subscribe as well. A lot of cool audio happening there. And Scott joining us tonight is our third man in the booth for this evening. Of course, he's a stalwart of the podcast waves here on North-South Connection, hosts Territorial. You can also hear him on a multitude of other programs across all of our networks. And that is Mr. Sean Kidd. A hearty, healthy birthday to you too, my friend.
Well, thank you guys. It's a pleasure to be here. It's been a while. And 53, you said away from what number, Scott?
7 bills.
7 bills. So I just turned 51. So I'm just sort of the 2 days away from that 53. So we'll just go from there.
There you go, brother.
Yeah. All right. So, Sean, as you know, with this new format here, and for you listeners and viewers as well, we have a guest on. We asked them to pick a town in a match that means a lot to them personally. We'll talk about that. We'll kind of go through some this day in history type stuff from the day that the match aired, talk some old kind of insider stuff and different newsletters, look at the vintage pop culture, and then we're going to live watch the match at the end of the show. So, Sean, why don't you tell us what town you picked and then why, and then what match you picked and why?
All right. So I live in D.C., and back when I was a younger dude, we had Landover, Maryland, we had the Cap Center. And one of the things I loved about the Cap Center is, one, the design was pretty badass, but I also liked going there. My first concert, and I'm going to age myself here a little bit, I went with my parents. It was Kenny Rogers with, with Doc Carton. Yeah.
You're gonna laugh. Kenny Rogers was my first concert as well.
Are you kidding me? Really?
Probably 30 years after you, but it was,
at least 30 years. I think mine was like 1982 or three is when
mine was probably like 98, I think 99. Yeah,
so much different.
It was kind of crazy though, but it was at the Warwick Musical Theater before they took it down.
That is wild.
I think I'd probably seen like musical acts here and there, but like that was my first like buy a ticket and go to the concert.
Yeah, this is more of like, hey, you're going with this whether you want to or not situation. But it's cool. Like the whole setup was neat. I like Kenny Rogers, don't get me wrong. But then they had other concerts there that I went to, but then wrestling. And the good thing about the wrestling there was between Landover and Baltimore, you had the Baltimore Civic Center, and then you have the Cap Center, which are about an hour apart. So any given month, you had probably two or three wrestling shows going on between the two. And it just became a staple. And the thing that really stood out for me was in 87, I got a Christmas present from my uncle to take me to a matinee show in December. And it was the first time I'd ever seen Andre the Giant wrestle live. And so it just really sticks out some of those memories from nostalgia. And it was back when it was DiBiase and Andre facing Hogan and Bam Bam, that whole time frame. So yeah, the place means a lot to me from a family standpoint and also some of my wrestling fandom, which is why I picked the match we talked about tonight. So
awesome. Well, we're definitely excited to get into it. The match is from July 11th, 1987 is what it aired. It was recorded about, 10 days or so before that.
July 2nd, yep.
Yeah, I guess we'll reveal the match in a bit, but we can just nail down the date for sure here.
Yep.
And then we'll move on. All right. So before we start diving into the match itself and some of the stuff around it, why don't we go back to that week in wrestling history, Scott? The week of July 6th to the 12th. And why don't you tell us what was going on in the world of wrestling on that particular day and week?
All right. Well, it was a very busy day in wrestling on the actual day that this match aired, July 11th, 1987. Sean's going to mark out the old Crock and Roll days with some of the stuff I'm going to say tonight.
There's a lot going on in Crockett back in this time frame.
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. And obviously UWF was still a thing because they didn't get swallowed up until later in the year. So they actually had a TV taping at the Myriad in Oklahoma City, UWF, on that date. Included a pre-show concert by Dusty's guy, David Allan Coe. He used to wear his hat or his shirt every other week in 1987, so and probably 86. Mm-hmm. So there was a couple of tapings. Actually, we had a title change here. Not the first one I'm going to mention. Wow, this is a great show. Steve Williams, Dr. Death, became the new UWF heavyweight champion. He beat Big Bubba. And speaking of why, makes total sense now why David Allan Coe was there. Dusty Rhodes was tied to Skandor Akbar for the match.
Correct.
So that makes total sense why David Allan Coe was there, because Dusty was there. So your UWF tag team champions, Brad Armstrong and Tim Horner, the Lightning Express, I think their name was, if I remember correctly. They beat Gary Young and the Terminator.
Oof.
Davey Haskins and Shane Douglas defeated the Enforcer and Bob Bradley. Bob Bradley would end up going to World Class after they shit the bed. Terry Gordy defeated Black Bart via DQ. Wait a minute.
What a card.
Fucking Watts. But this is stupid. Terry Gordy defeats Black Bart via DQ in a taped fist match.
Mm.
Why is there a DQ in a
tape? Oh, he used duct tape instead of masking.
The other thing in this time frame, this is also when Crockett bought out the UWF. So. Right. There's a reason why Watts was getting the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is down on the very dark days.
Yeah. Yes. Pretty good six man here in this taping. Dusty, Sting, and Chris Adams beat Eddie Gilbert, who was the TV champion, UWF TV champion, mm-hmm. Rick Steiner, and the Angel of Death in a bunkhouse match because Dusty would not let the bunkhouse match go. Well, that pay-per-view hadn't happened yet. So then they taped for the 8-1-87 episode. The Western States Heritage Champion, who was Sean
Barry Windham,
fought mm-hmm. Dick Murdoch to a 30-minute time limit draw. That might actually.
Yeah, I say that's probably pretty good.
That's a hell of a match.
Yeah,
that match. Yeah,
Jim Ross and Terry Taylor. I know Jim Ross and Terry Taylor provided commentary. The bout ended after Murdoch dropped Windham with the brainbuster. And in the dark matches, the Road Warriors defeated the NWA United States Tag Team Champions, the Midnight Express, in a non-title match, and Steve Cox won a $10,000 on a pole battle royal.
Steve Cox
would end up going to
Vince Russo is in the crowd. He's like, "Oh, that, a pole! All right,
pole." Steve Cox, if it's the same one I'm thinking of, would end up going to World Class, and he'd actually win the tag belts with Michael Hayes a couple times. If it's the same one I watched in '88,
same guy.
Too bad he didn't team with Balls Mahoney.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Same guy, and they were also at Super Clash. They took on the Samoan SWAT team at the time.
That is right.
Yep.
There was also on this day, I don't know if it's the same night, but NWA Southern Professional Wrestling. I don't have no idea what that is. I don't either. It was hosted
by. That
would
be like the one that was like 40th on the top 10s in PWI. It was like all the big promotions, yeah. A little one. And then in the right corner, it was always like the ones you never heard of in the bottom.
Yeah,
it's like one of the random territories you never hear of, and you go on YouTube and they have like two episodes on there for you to find.
Pretty much, yeah. Yes. So it was hosted. So we got to listen to this. So it was hosted by Sir Oliver Humperdinck and J.J. Dillon.
Oh, Jesus! So it's a Florida. It's a Florida territory.
Yeah, included comments from Blackjack Mulligan. Oh, definitely Blackjack Mulligan, Kevin Sullivan on facing Dory Funk Jr. and Humper. Yeah, this is totally
Florida. Yeah,
Florida. Following day in Orlando with Mulligan warning Sullivan not to double cross him. And Sullivan stating they could be teammates without being friends. Moments later, the UWF Western States Heritage Champion, Barry Windham, stormed in and objected to his father teaming with Sullivan, featured two live event promos for the Great American Bash Tour, featuring NWA World Heavyweight Champion, the Nate, Ric Flair, and Dusty Rhodes, respectively, included comments from Bugsy McGraw, who urged fans to, who urged fans to celebrate their freedom at the Bash Tour events. I'm sure he probably ran around half naked. Featured the Jimmy Garvin. Oh, here you go, Sean. Jimmy Garvin versus Arn Anderson. NWA Tag Team Champions, the Rock and Roll Express against the Midnight Express, and Tully Blanchard versus Barry Windham matches taped July 1st in Lakeland, Florida.
So, and that's like right at the tail end of the Florida territory going dead. So it sounds like it's at the tail end of that.
Yeah,
so,
it does sound like pretty much. Yeah. Then there was an episode of NWA Super Bouts, which featured Barry Windham versus Big Bubba. This is before he was still champion. Big Bubba. Mm-hmm. And Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy versus Sting and Eddie Gilbert, taped June 6th at the Greensboro Coliseum. Speaking of the Greensboro Coliseum, we had a TV taping on this date in Greensboro for Jim Crockett Promotions. We had three dark matches. Kendall Windham defeated Thunderfoot number one. Sean totally would be marketed that.
Did he have to beat number one to get the number two and then number two to get
the number one? Thunderfoot number two had to job to Nelson Royal, so he really drew the short straw. The Mod Squad defeated...
Sean's favorite gimmick, the Thunderfeet.
That's what I was thinking. My favorite tag team, the Thunderfoot. Thunderfoot. I'm also laughing because I remember you guys doing the whole MSG like opening like matches, and this is totally reminding me of kind of the setup of some of those matches.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Please bring back PTSD as some of those cards.
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
This you haven't lived to transcribe full play-by-play for like Shane Douglas versus the Brooklyn Brawler for like 13-minute match or whatever.
Oh, God. So bad. The Mod Squad defeated Jimmy Valiant and Lasertron.
Jesus Christ.
It's 6-16. Worldwide. So now these are the tapings for Worldwide. Michael Hayes and Buddy Roberts fought Manny Fernandez and Ivan Koloff to a time limit draw. Fernandez kicked out of a sunset flip from Hayes just before the bell rang. Ole Anderson.
Do you know why it was Ivan Koloff? With Manny?
Oh, because Rude left.
Because Rude left while they were tag team champions and nothing left, why they had the belts.
I just watched that on my Chrono watch. Yeah, he was already off the WWF. Yep.
Yep.
Ole defeated the Barbarian. Not that Barbarian. I think it was some hump.
Ole's last match in 87.
Yep. Arn and the television champion Tully Blanchard defeated the Rock and Roll Express via DQ. On an episode of Worldwide from July 18th, this is another NWA Super Bouts. It was one match. Ric Flair.
Where did NWA Super Bouts air?
I don't know.
It aired on TBS. It's the the main event. The NWA main event was spun off from Super Bouts.
Yeah.
All right. So Sunday nights.
Yep.
Yeah. Main event was always Sundays at 6:05.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
There's two of those matches. The first one, Ric Flair defending the world title against Jimmy Garvin, because they had a great feud going on middle of the year, in a steel cage match with the figure four holding the ropes for leverage, typical Flair. Stips added, if Flair would win a date with Precious if he won. Midway through the bout, Ronnie Garvin, your boy, Sean, appeared ringside to offer moral support to the challenger. After the match, Precious climbed in the ring to tend to Jimmy, but was grabbed by Flair. Ron then assaulted Flair until he left the cage, and we all know what that would lead to.
That was a hell of a cage match. Probably one of Jimmy Garvin's better matches ever, to be honest with you.
Totally. No, I agree.
Yeah.
He started this journey for Ronnie to win the world title in September.
That is correct. And now here is your other title change. Lex Luger is your new United States champion. He beat Nikita Koloff, also in a steel cage, via knockout with the torture rack after hitting him in the back with a steel chair. In the ring by J.J. Dillon while Earl Hebner was knocked out. Koloff came into the ring wearing a neck brace, but Luger took it off midway through the match. After the bout, Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson celebrated in the ring. So it was on this date that Lex Luger won his first, not his first singles title because he was champion in Florida. His first Crockett title, I guess, United States champion. He'd, of course, hold that till the Stockade, where he would lose to Dusty. So not bad. Not a bad day in Crockett world.
What's going on there? Jesus.
Yeah. I'm not done yet because we have not one, but four WWF house shows. Four.
On the same day?
Yeah. I'll save this one for last because it's the night show, I could tell. Here are the other, there's three other shows. Here they are. The first one is from the Kiel Auditorium in St. Louis. Brad Rangins defeated Tiger Chung Lee. Lanny Poffo defeated Terry Gibbs. Sika defeated Outback Jack. Four people in St. Louis.
So this is Outback was already cooked, huh? Because didn't he debut like May or June of 87, right? Oh, in there? He's already losing.
Sika? Did he beat Sika? I missed it. Did he beat Sika in that match?
Yeah, no, beat Sika beat him. That's what we're saying.
So he's already cooked. You're right.
Yeah,
he's
already he's already been, I think. Pretty much, right?
Yeah.
Billy Jack Haynes and Paul Orndorff fought to a draw. Hillbilly Jim with Little Beaver in his corner defeated King. This was still going on. WrestleMania was fucking 4 months earlier. Defeated King Kong Bundy via countout as Bundy chased Beaver around ringside. Oh, God, I feel bad for these people. How much were these tickets? This had to have been a matinee because I wouldn't have paid for primetime for this show. Your women's tag team champions, the Criscolo D'Amato special, Judy Martin and Leilani Kai, defeated the Jumping Bomb Angels. So that started like mid
80s. Hey, the Angels lost that. What a terrible. Where's the show again?
The Kiel Auditorium in St. Louis.
Oof. That's a bomb for a great building.
And in your main event at the 10-minute mark, Hulk Hogan successfully defended the world title against Harley Race. So you got a decent main event, but you made up for it with literally six pieces of crap in a row.
Well, that's why they did it, right? Yeah. They knew Hogan Harley was going to draw huge in St. Louis. So why bother?
Yeah.
Next up, we have the Sun Dome in Tampa. The Dingo Warrior defeated Joe Murto. God, Joe Murto on a house show? Oh my God. Brady Boone pinned the Gladiator.
Good Lord.
That match replaced the scheduled Rick Rude versus CV Afi match. Why? I don't know. It's weird.
What an offset.
Yeah. Pedro Morales defeated Frenchie Martin. I don't know. Jesus. I think JR would prefer St. Louis over Tampa.
Oh, my Lord.
I think St. Louis is sounding better and better.
You know who Pedro was subbing for? Chavo Classic. I didn't even know he was in WWF.
When was he in the WWF?
I know,
he wasn't. He must have just been maybe doing like a one-off shot or something. But
yeah, maybe. That's crazy.
Frenchie and Pedro in 87.
He was able to support Lasertron in the tag team match with Giants instead of Scepter under the mask as Lasertron.
Pretty brutal. Coco Beware pinned Nikita Koloff. Nikita Koloff. Nikolai Volkov. It should have been Nikita Koloff. Well, he would have dropped the Coco. George Steele defeated Danny Davis by countout. And in the main event, Ken Patera defeated Hercules by DQ.
Yeah, I'm all in on St. Louis on that one.
What right. a terrible, but both are freaking terrible. Like awful. After Hogan Harley, what's the next best Harley? What's the next best match?
Danny Davis.
I'm sorry, I forgot one. This one actually made it in Tampa. I'm sorry, I missed one after Pedro and Frenchie. Heart Foundation Rougeau's.
All right, well then, all right. That's
your best match. Right. Heart Foundation Rougeau's. Yeah. Heart Foundation with the tag champs, and they beat the Rougeau's. So, okay. All right. This card, this is only five matches. I don't know what the hell this mess was. This was at the City Gym in Orangeburg, South Carolina.
The gym.
You're gonna want Pedro and Frenchie more and more after this one. Steve Douglas defeated Andre Lomax. Sounds like two.
I'm sorry. Who? What?
Is that Bernie's cousin?
Eric Cooper defeated the Bandit. What the fuck is this? This had to be like a
this is WWF.
This had to have been a fundraiser. I can't believe this show is on Sean's episode. This is great. Al Navarro defeated David Three Feathers. This is the greatest card I've ever read in the history of the show.
I've never heard of any of these people.
This is the greatest card in the history of the show. I'm telling you.
I don't know any of these people. That's what is this?
Bubba Kirk defeated Don Driggers. Another jobber via reverse decision. A reverse decision. Don Driggers got the win.
A WWF card. I don't get it.
Where's the WWF connection on this one?
I know. Your main event. Your women's champion. Oh, this must be hurt because it's South Carolina. Fabulous Moolah defeated Jean Kirkland. So this had to have been a Moolah thing because they're in
South
Carolina.
She had to pay for the shackles to keep the women tied up.
She jobbed to Jean Kirkland, and then Jean Kirkland, you know, jobbed to the fucking promoter. Anyway,
St. Louis winning.
So this is just that was like a Moolah. Did she have a school? Like were those trainees or something?
It had to be
one of those.
It had to be something like that.
All right. Well, here's the big show. Here's the show that we have an evening show at the Boston Garden. So this was the night show on NESN. Gorilla and Alfred on commentary. This was on TV. So this is actually probably because none of the guys on this show are at any of these other shows. So, Jim Powers pinned Shadow Number 2. With a sunset flip at 11:07.
Oh, yeah, this is the summer of the Young Stallions in the Shadows.
Literally like 14 straight episodes of primetime. We got a match either in Houston, San Antonio, either Garden, any of the Gardens. It was the Shadows and the Stallions from like fucking May to like October. Every episode of primetime. Dino Bravo pinned Scott Casey with his side suplex. Jimmy Hart did commentary. Cowboy Bob pinned Jerry Allen with a superplex. Tito Santana pinned the Magnificent Morocco, who was subbing for Butch Reed at 8:22 with a sunset.
This would be the final days of that too, right? Because he's going to turn into Rock soon, I think.
Yeah. Here's why.
I could deal with that match.
This is why. This is the comment after that. After the bout, and against the wishes of Bob Orton, who came to ringside, Morocco shook Santana's hand for being the better man, because then Orton and Morocco feuded.
Yeah,
because they were a tag team, and then after Morocco won that feud, then he got superstar. They all, you know, jacked up, and we all know what happened after that. Bruno in July of '87 defeated Honky by countout at 11:17 after ramming the champion face first into the ring post and then chasing Hart into the ring just before the 10 count. Bruno was subbing for Jake.
Yep. Bruno could still go to an extent. So
imagine Bruno winning the IC title, like out of the blue, just to pop a crowd. That would have been ridiculous.
Well, I mean, he was feuding with Savage too when he hurt Steamboat. So he's used to these matches. Yeah. So
that's true. One man gang pinned Jose Luis Rivera at 4:11 with the front suplex. Rivera was subbing for Corporal Kirshner. I didn't know he was still around in mid 87. I forgot.
This might be the subbing because he left.
I think he's gone at this point.
Well, since Jim Powers wrestled Shadow Number 2.
Ooh, Paul Roma.
Paul Roma wrestled Shadow Number 1, and he won that. That match was 8:54. So Jim Powers wrestled 3 minutes.
And those definitely are a primetime, I guarantee it.
Yeah. I think almost all these matches are primetime. The only one that wasn't on a primetime was the Bruno Honky match. Beefcake defeated Johnny V via submission with the sleeper after the bout. He He cut Johnny V's hair before spraying him with yarn spray. And then in the main event, Rick Martel and subbing for Tom Zenk. I wonder if had he left at that point? Did he pretty much bail in July? He must have bailed by
Now. Because it was around September where him and Tito got together against the whole Islanders thing.
They win the belts and they win the belts in October, Strikeforce. Yeah. So JYD subbed for Tom Zenk, and they beat the Islanders at 11:22, and JYD pinned Tama with a power slam.
Yeah, Tito was coming right after this then.
Yeah. After the match, the Islanders attacked their opponents. So
I don't know.
Just rough cards.
I know they're still committed to running the three tours because those are three very distinct cities with a fully different roster. Moolah bullshit aside, you got to look at that and be like, all right, we got to condense to two. I mean, I don't know how. I guess you're running it with Bruno for this one, but normally who's the headliner on that? I guess Honky and Jake.
It sounds like, you know what it looks like? It sounds like the Tampa show was like a legit house show. Sounds like the St. Louis one and the South Carolina one were maybe like specific for Harley and Moolah. Maybe they were raising money, or maybe, you know, Vince was doing both of them favors. No pun intended. Because those cards seem so skewed for Harley and Moolah.
Yeah, no, I think they were still running three. I think St. Louis, you know, Boston, St. Louis is, I guess you got Hogan.
But that's in essence four loops, because that Boston Garden card, nobody from it was on any of those other shows.
Yeah, but I don't count that South Carolina thing is nothing. It's three, really. It's A, B, and C.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But Harley was feuding with Hogan post WrestleMania. It was Hogan and Harley like through the end of the year almost.
Well, yeah, because it was 88 when Harley when they wrestled on Saturday's main event. Harley fucked.
No, I think these are the three loops. Savage on any of those, which is interesting.
Did he? Did they cool him off before the face turn? Probably. Maybe,
because
I don't see any
superstars. Remember, they retape it because the big superstars one where he like kind of wrestles as a face, and isn't that like September? Because like, when does he start challenging Honky? Well, August, September.
It can't be. So Honky just won the title a couple weeks ago, and then Macho Man was in a locker with the room and everything. So he's still a heel at this point.
Yeah.
So
it's been 6 weeks
close. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been 6 weeks. It's been about 6 weeks since Honky won the belt. But I mean, I don't see any. I'm looking at these again, and I don't see sub for Randy Savage anywhere.
They must have given him a month off or something. Yeah. All right. Well,
but Butch Reed seemed to be subbed for a lot in this time frame.
Is it sad to say that fucking UWF had the best matches of the day? Seriously. I mean,
well, no. I mean, I think, yeah, I know. UWF was still good on occasion at this point in time. Like the card we're going to talk about tonight is a great card.
They had their talent. They saw their talent. They were just getting paid by the Crockett's. It was still.
I think if WWF had combined those, if you take the best, pluck the best out of each town, they have the best card. But the problem is, this is all dispersed out.
It was just still. So anyway, there's your house shows and other shows for that week. But we have some other historical notes during that week in 87. JR, what do we got?
All right, we got a couple editions of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Rewind from Reddit. Dug these up. So we're going to go through the July 6th and July 13th installments here. Terry Taylor, new breed, injury updates. Taylor had 6 inches of small intestine and 4 inches of large intestine and his appendix removed and has a 9-inch scar. He's already been announced for July 25th bash, which seems really soon. On the new breed's accident, the car hydroplaned. They were thrown through the windshield and cut badly. The car then exploded. Had they been wearing seatbelts, they wouldn't have gotten out of the car in time to avoid the explosion. That is insane.
Yeah, the new breed was like one of those what could have been tag teams because they introduced them.
Yeah, it was like Chris Champion
and Sean Royal.
Nelson Royal's kid. Yeah, they were on the Saturday 605 show because I've been watching a chrono, and they were on like every week in 87 for like, I don't know, 8 months.
They were from the future where Dusty Rhodes was the president, by the way.
Yeah,
that was their gimmick.
Yeah.
And they feuded with the Rock and Rolls, and then they turned face and went after the Midnight Express, and that's when everything went to hell when they got in a car accident. So they had a ton of upside as a team if they had actually lasted.
Well, they're probably lucky to be alive. So I guess they'll take
well, it. Yes, correct.
Dusty could really be mayor, much less president. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. All right, speaking of, Ted DiBiase's debut vignettes have been airing. He's going to be getting a huge push. Already some of the WWF guys are bitter about it, and Dave doesn't understand why. It's not like DiBiase can't work a talk. Take note of his muscular chauffeur, Virgil, who will be certainly be living the American dream. Come August, DiBiase will be tossing a few hundred dollars into the crowd of matches, and that should get over. Dave's been told the new character is one part Ric Flair and a rich playboy, and one part Vince McMahon, genuinely believing everyone has a price. Here's the deal, how the Midnight Rockers got fired. After the Jim Duggan and Iron Sheik incident, the powers that be gave a big speech about it and warned that guys, that sort of behavior would not be tolerated. After the Rochester House Show, the Rockers publicly behaved as if that didn't apply to them, and turns out it did. Speaking of Sheik, after his year of probation, if he keeps his nose clean, the cocaine possession charge will be expunged from the record. As for Duggan, the case hasn't been resolved yet. He expects to be back in the WWF when this is all blown over. Also on the outs from WWF is Jim Barnett. Barnett recently attempted suicide. The word Dave has is that he tried to make some sort of power play that didn't work. Wow. Extremely minor note.
Barnett suicide.
I don't remember that either. I remember that power play.
Yeah, I remember the suicide.
Wow. I don't remember.
The guy writing this up says, one minor note I'm including here. In the Billionaire Ted skits in 1996, Hulk Hogan parodies called The Huckster. That's something Vince ripped from an 80s issue of The Observer, apparently. I bring it up because Hulk Hogan and Harley Race had a match from the last MSG show that caught my attention. It was the highest rated match on the card with 3 stars, says Dave. And Dave calls Hogan The Huckster. On June 5th, Bad News Allen wrestled Mr. Hito and apparently annihilated him. And wouldn't stop and attacked Yamada, who tried to make the save. He beat the shit out of him, too. Allen got cheered through all this until Owen Hart came out and cleaned the ring. Anyway, this is all set up a main event where Allen interfered in Hart's North America title match and brutalized him to where he'd be written off the next show so he could take a vacation. Speaking of Stampede, All Japan is sending John Tenta to Stampede to learn the American style.
Earthquake. Yeah.
Earthquake. Paulie Dangerously has been fired from Memphis. Him and Tommy Rich are both gone after the June 23rd card in Louisville, which is headlined by a scaffold tag team match with Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee against Tommy Rich and Austin Idol. The scaffold's being separated by 3 feet of air. So Dave's information currently is that Rich didn't show up, dangerously went up the scaffold, and was fired following a confrontation from Lawler. I guess that's proven to be incorrect for this guy.
That was a hot feud in Memphis at the time, too, that whole thing, because it was they had the loser shave your head match, which was pretty insane in Memphis. So it's a big one in Memphis.
Dave has concerns about Steve Williams' choice of world champion for UWF, as well as production process. He referred to Barry Windham as Western States champion on a most recent episode. Windham did win the title of the tournament on June 20th, but the episode was taped June 11th. It's great that they planned things out, but what if Windham had gotten in a car accident or injured? As we've seen recently, there's not a terribly remote possibility for wrestlers.
Wow.
Jim Crockett Promotions NWA has booked Flair in a tag title match just for the Bash. Dave's confused what sense it makes that Flair challenger for the tag titles when it's well established you can't have both at the same time. And Rick's sure as hell not going to give up the world title. The WWF did an unannounced drug test on June 23rd. Dave isn't sure what to think yet. On the one hand, wrestling has a huge drug problem, and anything promotions can do to avoid a scandal is fine by him. At the same time, it's a bit hypocritical, considering how blatant the WWF is about encouraging the steroid use. World Class's fall continues. On June 22nd, Lance Von Erich no-showed his second scheduled return match from elbow surgery, so Kerry was sent out to make what he called the most embarrassing announcement of my career. In the ring, he said, William Vaughn, who you know is our cousin Lance Von Erich, isn't here tonight because he chickened out of his match with Brian Adias. Of course, Lance's real name is Kevin Vaughn, not William Vaughn. And he never agreed to appear in the first place because he signed on with David Manning, who's trying to start his own promotion in Dallas with Lance as top star. So Fritz is trying to bury him. Dave guesses if Manning's promotion actually gets off the ground, Lance will use the name Lance Vaughn. Though if Manning wants to use Lance as a top star, it's not going to get very far anyway. In other news, Kerry's surgeon said there's no hope for him returning to the ring. There's a Von Erich autobiography scheduled for Christmas. Kerry and Fritz are said to be devastated by the prognosis, so they're acting as though he'll be back any week. Dave expects gimmicks to keep him involved, but it's all very pathetic. As to the autobiography, Dave hears the book will be mostly about religion and not wrestling. The rumor with the AWA this week is that Vern Gagne, Ray Stevens, and Wahoo McDaniels are going to open an office in San Francisco and leave the AWA to Greg Gagne. That's pretty much it from this
installment,
which is pretty weak. Any thoughts on all that?
That is the biggest crap I've ever heard in my life. That was not happening.
I mean, there's so many thoughts. I mean, it's like, where do you start? Like,
wow.
I mean, the world class stuff obviously hits hard now based on the timing, you know, with the Iron Claw and everything. So it all makes sense. I mean, the DiBiase stuff played out. Flair is tag team and a tag team going for the titles. I don't remember that at all at this time frame. The AWA is very funny considering it's 87 and it lasts till 90. So there's just a lot of history in what you just went over, which is really, when you think about it from a past standpoint, it just makes you go, wow. just wow.
I watched, I actually, one of my Chrono watches, I literally watched all of World Class, and 87 wasn't horrendous, but the last episode they have on Peacock is October 29th, 88. And that whole year of 88 is just unwatchable crap. I mean, it's just crap. Too much Eric Embry, who I think was an overrated hump. And, I mean, it was pretty much Carrie, Carrie and Lawler at the end, and they would promote Super Clash like seven times during the episodes. So there'd be like two matches. When you got to promote Bob Bradley as like an upper mid-carder, you're fucked pretty much.
The Eric Embry stuff again, and not just let you know, I have an actual episode of Territorial coming up that looks at the end of World Class, and it's all about Eric Embry ascending to the USWA. Just sneak peek there. We actually cover that with Logan and Schiff, which is a really good episode. The Eric Embry phenomenon is unbelievable. But that's a whole other subject.
Does he end up in Global? He goes to Global after that, right?
He actually sticks with the USWA and goes to Tennessee after it closes in Dallas. Yeah. So, yeah.
Like he was like the big cruiserweight or light heavyweight. Yeah. And
he was all over PWI. When I started like getting into the magazines in the early 90s and stuff, like, yeah, he was in there a ton in PWI.
Yeah. He started showing up in 87. Yeah.
Spoil it, but he is more over than Von Erichs at the end, which is nuts. But that's a whole, listen to that pod when it comes up.
He was just turning, it's funny. He was just turning those last couple episodes on Peacock in mid-October of 88. He was just starting to turn baby.
He was shooting with Kendall Windham and he turns face. So that is exactly when it starts. Yep.
Yep. And then the show ended. But it's just bad. Black Bart. the only saving grace, and I know that they leave eventually, in that back half of 88 was the Samoan SWAT team. It was pretty much because they were feuding with Steve. That's why I said Steve Cox, him and Michael Hayes were the tag champs, and they were feuding most of 88. And they were great. But like the main event situation was just absolute. It was just crap. I mean, it was crap. If it wasn't for Lawler and the whole setup for Super Clash, it was just garbage. There was nothing left in World Class. Even by 88, they had to go to, they had to sell. That's why the one part of Iron Claw I don't buy. I understand. Fritz pretty much handed it to Jerry Jarrett in real life. I don't know why they made such a big fucking deal in the movie.
He did, but the Von Erichs owned 40% of it up until the end. I mean, it's a whole, again, listen, we cover it all on the pod with USW.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin wanted it, right? And he gave it away. Whereas they turned that around in the movie where that Kevin.
In the movie, they
sold Kevin it against Fritz's wishes.
Yeah.
Well, and the timeline's all off too. Like he's like watching SummerSlam 90, and that's what he finds out about getting it. I mean, that's years after. So it's
exactly. It's so yeah.
I like also that Fritz is like watching SummerSlam like in the middle of the afternoon.
I know, right?
Listen, it's all my kids to see in the movies, but ultimately, it all played out the way it, well, I won't get into it, but it played out the way.
I love how the I wonder who
it's a great movie.
Yeah,
it is. No, it is a great movie. I like how they, I wonder who they put in the script to throw a jab at fucking Warrior. Oh, you're a better guy than your ex tag partner or whatever. A jerk, Jim Hellwig or whatever.
Yeah.
That's such an inside Carney thing that was in the script. I literally laughed out loud in the theater when that came up. That was so funny.
87 for me is just like, is ultimately probably my favorite wrestling year because, JT just covered a wide spectrum of wrestling that was going on. And I could literally see it all on my TV in syndication. Like I could not leave my house until like a Saturday to like 3 p.m. if I was going to do something because it was on literally from 9 a.m. to like 3 p.m. It's nuts.
I know.
But it is a lot. Then you throw in Glow, you throw in all that other stuff. It was just a lot in 87.
It was a lot.
All right, let's hit these notes quick. Yeah, on the 13th here. Crockett's Great American Bash Tour was looking more successful than expected. The first four shows drew big time, grossing roughly $600,000 in total, including a $250,000 gate on July 4th at the Omni for the first War Games. Dave talks about the spends a lot of time talking about the match and the fans' impressions. Opened with a Michael Hayes concert, which the crowd loved. The David Allen Coe concert as well. Wrestling didn't start till 8:30. And kind of goes on about the pops and stuff. WWF has settled out of court with John Stossel of 2020. Back in 1984, David Schultz slapped Stossel hard on the ear during an interview with MSG. The settlement gives Stossel $425,000. $275,000 of that comes from the WWF, and the rest is covered by insurance. The WWF did not want this going to trial with the Duggan Sheik incident fresh in everyone's mind. If it did go to trial, odds are the payout would have been much more. International Wrestling in Montreal will be no more by the end of the month. They've been struggling since the WWF took Dino Bravo and Rick Martel. Imagine that. Your promotion is living on Dino Bravo. And word is that WWF has been picking up the TV and arena contracts. Dave expects they also may pick up Steve Strong, who's their top babyface. Strong only would end up working one match in the 80s and become the Minotaur WCW.
Minotaur.
Jim Cornette's out with injury. He injured his knee on June 27th while kicking Ricky Morton. It's not the knee he injured in the scaffold match in November, but the damage was similar in nature but less severe. He'll get an arthroscopic surgery this past week and needs major surgery as well. The new breed are recovering well. Champion's arm was broken in two places, but the breaks were clean. Nelson Royal's out longer due to the burns on his back of his head. Mm-hmm. Crockett's promoting a dating game segment for July 25th in Philadelphia featuring Lex Luger. Should be the same idea as when they did it in Florida with Ed Gantner. They'll probably have Nikita Koloff pretend to be one of the girls, leading to Lex winning a date with Nikita to build matches. Florida's version was good because Gantner had funny promos for it and played a dumb jock. Luger fits the bill, but not sure Dave has this. Dave's not sure he's got the sense of humor at all.
This was such a gimmick during the bashes. They used to do it with the Rock and Roll Express to win a date with the Rock and Roll Express. And then the girls were like 14. This is a classic Crockett gimmick. It's awful.
You might as well had Atlanta Lively there.
Win a date with Lex Luger. And actually, during the match we watched tonight, they actually pimped that on the commentary, by the way.
That's funny.
It's funny.
That's crazy.
Richard Landrum, a former Crockett TV announcer who Tony Schiavone took his job, was sentenced to 90 years in prison. He was convicted of 9 felonies in a case that looked like it came right out of a Lifetime movie as he wiretapped his estranged wife's phone and then put a bomb in the car of the guy she was dating. So there you go.
Wow.
Owen Hart versus Bad News Allen from June 19th sounds like a wild match. They drew 1,200 fans, and it would Allen go nuts and beating down 2 referees. Hart did 2 dives to the outside after the match, and they did fines and suspensions. Central States is a mess. It's unclear who the tag team champions are. Carl Kovacs and the Warlord won the tournament, but they fired Kovacs after Warlord went to Japan. Dave also heard that Bobby Jaggers and Bart Batten won the belts. And now they've split up with Jaggers turning on Batten. No idea what's going on. Small note, World Class is June 29th tag tournament. Ted Arcidi and Texas Red down Bruiser Brody in the spoiler. They wound up losing in the finals to Killer Brooks and Len Denton. One issue, that's not Gene Lewis, is Texas Red. It's some big green guy named Mark Calloway under the mask. That's right. This is a tournament featuring several tag matches against The Undertaker. World Class's new TV efforts are looking impressive. It's still stupid to push Kerry like this, but it's sad to see. World Class's TV from June 28th was better than any other promotions TV show over the last few weeks. Dave saw a newspaper report of a fan in Louisville suing Jerry Lawler because Lawler spit on them. It's better than the reason that most people sue Lawler. Teddy Biasi's vignettes are getting over. Dave thinks Virgil will end up being the greatest answer to Big Bubba and make it big as a face. But Dave also can't abide that dog, because Virgil is so bad, words haven't been invented to describe him. Rick Steiner's younger brother, Scott, will start in August using the name Scott Sanders. Or Steve's brother, maybe. Ron Simmons will also be coming up around that time, which will be great for him, as he'll get in there at the top workers and help him become a future star. Mm-hmm. Scott Hall is gone from Florida. Dave believes the War Games match was taped in full and may appear on the Bash video release. Clarification on Montreal, they might still run Northern Ontario, but they're out of Montreal. More on Cornette, their kayfabe injury is Robert Gibson put him in a leg lock and tore up his knee. Dave's understanding the real story is Cordy jumped to stomp Morton and his leg gave up. Continental did a whip on a pole match with Dutch Mantel and Wendell Cooley. Went to a no contest.
I forgot about Continental.
With a biased referee in favor of Cooley, trade-offs of the whip. And the heel jobber giving Mantel a whip, and both guys popping each other the whips until they were pulled apart. Next week, they're going to have a no-rope bull whips legal match.
Continental's a whole nother story, too. Whole nother story.
Bullwhip on Robert Fuller's pole match.
Yes.
On June 18th, the Honky Tonk Man pinned Bruno Sammartino to keep the IC title. Dave thinks it may be the first time Bruno's been pinned since he lost to Billy Graham. We're getting a correction.
I need that match.
Well, this guy given the note saying we're getting corrections because Bruno was not pinned. So I guess someone in the comments right on this Reddit post missed it. Maybe it was the count.
I can't see Bruno agreeing to take the dive for Funky. I just don't see that.
Maybe some other heels. I bet you maybe would have put over Savage maybe. I could not see Bruno jobbing for.
Yeah, I'm guessing this is Dave getting misinformation probably.
Yeah.
You stunned me with that comment.
That ain't happening.
AWA's June 13th TV taping drew 2,200 because the fans didn't realize the Midnight Rockers weren't going to be there. Andre the Giant's due to resume his feud with Hulk Hogan in the fall. Business is usually down during the summer. Dave assumes they don't want to waste the angle on the summer crowds when they can make more money later in the year.
Makes perfect sense.
They get some stuff on the Pennsylvania legislature about deregulating wrestling, so that's about it. All right. So a lot going on there for sure.
1987.
That is an epic list of jobbers on that in that report. Yeah, Wayne Kovacs. Is that his name? I'm mishmashing names.
Bertie Lovax.
Bertie Lovax.
All right. Listen, before you know, the territories are drying up and there'll be one man standing on his own, Mr. Eric Embry, completely alone. Just like Hart sang about, the number one song in the nation this week in 1987 is Alone by Hart. And that brings us to Scott Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner.
Yes, Eric Embry's all alone and being a lousy light heavyweight at 250 pounds or whatever he was. Anyway, Alone by Hart. This is, of course, during their renaissance of the 80s at number one, 9 weeks on the chart, and they were a fresh number one this week. At number two, we got, I mean, this is a killer top 10 for late 80s. You got a little Whitney at number two with I Want to Dance with Somebody. Fantastic movie song here, Shakedown. By Bob Seger from
Beverly Great Hills Song.
Cop. Great song. Great movie.
Great song.
Songbird by Kenny G. I'm sure JR heard that in many a dentist's office in his 1987. Don't Disturb This Groove by The System at number five. Point of No Return by Exposé at number six. Funky Town by Pseudo Echo at number seven. This sounds like a Sean song. I don't know why. Something So Strong by Crowded House at number eight.
That's a good song.
Something So Strong. Good song.
Yeah.
Yep. Head to Toe by Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam at number nine. And at number 10, From the Joshua Tree, Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For by U2.
Yeah, I'm good.
Incidentally, I Want Your Sex by George Michael was number 11. So there we go. All right, we go from the radio to the big screen. So what was going on this weekend in the movies? Here's your top. I'm going to do the 11 because 11 has a wrestling. I know I normally do the top 10, but I'm going to add number 11 because it is wrestling related. Even better.
I remember Summer 11. Of 87 is probably pretty hot on the movies.
Yeah. Number 11, yeah. Predator.
Oh.
Why do you think Jesse wasn't around for most of the spring and after Mania? So
That doesn't surprise me one bit.
There are Arnold, Jesse, Carl Weathers, ain't no big fat sloppy pigs in that cast. Number 10, Roxanne, Steve Martin, the Cyrano de Bergerac adaptation. Number
underrated
nine,
comedy. Good movie.
It was a good movie. Number nine, Spaceballs. Schwartz is as big as mine. Robert Fuller's Schwartz in a Continental. Number eight, The Untouchables. Amazing movie.
Fantastic.
Finally won Sean Connery an Oscar. Number seven, a movie I mentioned a couple times on the Billboard, Beverly Hills Cop 2, has made $132 million at this point. Number six, Witches of Eastwick. Jack and who were the witches? Cher, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Susan Sarandon.
Susan Sarandon, yeah. Number five, little Elizabeth Shue action. Adventures in Babysitting. Number four, Inner Space. I'm trying to remember that. Is that Martin Short?
Martin Short.
It is Martin Short. Okay.
Dennis Quaid.
Number three. Dennis Quaid, you're right. Number three, Dragnet, the terrible movie with Jim Belushi and Tom Hanks. Number two, amazing movie, Full Metal Jacket at number two. And the number one movie of the week making its debut. So it made the most money of the weekend. Revenge of the Nerds 2. Nerds in Paradise. Yes, Nerds in Paradise. Yeah. Nerds! Stan Gable hadn't turned babyface yet. I don't know if, did Ogre? I don't know if Ogre. This is the epic one where
Ogre turns babyface in this movie.
Yeah, this is the one where Ogre takes like a 14-minute piss.
Yes.
So, it's pretty great.
It's still Thunder in Paradise.
It's still Thunder in Paradise, no. Where Chris Lemon took a 14-minute piss. No, Hogan took no pisses because nobody wanted. He wasn't going to give any tests out. So, and the only sports, nothing crazy, just baseball on this Saturday. Let's see. The Mets lost to the Mets beat the Astros 9-6. Yankees lost in 15 innings to the White Sox 5-2. I know you didn't care much as a kid, Sean. Did you care at all? Orioles?
Sports?
Anybody?
No. Wrestling.
Okay.
There was all wrestling.
All right. Fair enough. So that's why
it's DT went over. That's all I had on my TV.
Yep. That's why I have a brewery hat on tonight. In the AL East, the Yankees were in first place. They had a 3-game lead on the Blue Jays, 4 on the Tigers. Minnesota leading the West by 2 over Oakland and Kansas City, 4 over the Angels. St. Louis leading the NL East by 9 over the Expos and Cubs, 9.5 over the Mets. And the Reds lead the West by 2.5 over the Astros, 3 over the Giants. And that is pretty much it for your pop culture corner, JR.
All right. So that'll do it for that. So that means we can go ahead and move forward into our match for tonight, Sean. And I don't think we've properly introduced it. So why don't you tell us what we're going to be watching in Washington, D.C.?
So this is one of the first matches of the Great American Bash in 1987. It is for the World Tag Team titles. It is the Rock and Roll Express versus U.S. Tag Team Champions Midnight Express. And you brought it up a little bit about the whole thing with Jim Cornette being injured and everything, and they kayfabed it that Robert Gibson had hurt him. That's why he's not here tonight. The other fact to this match is why this match is happening is the Rock and Roll Express had no challengers for their tag team titles because they were just given the belts because Rude left. And yep. So they just aired a show on TV that was from taped from somewhere that showed them beating them, Rude and Fernandez, in a non-title match. And they just gave the Rock and Rolls the belts. So literally, they just got them a couple weeks ago. And they have nobody to feud with. So naturally, they just put them in with the Midnights to go at it. So.
All right. All right. Some real quick notes here, courtesy of our good friend, Mr. Steve Riddle. Washington, D.C. was a city that was used extensively by WWF and NWA as a regular stop, basically acted as a border between the territories. D.C. Landovers hosted 7 WWE pay-per-views. Sean, do you want to attempt to name any of them?
Oh, Jesus. I know Survivor Series 95.
Yep.
Well, D.C. in general, because I know Capitol. I know what was the one in 1990 I was at was RoboCop, but that was at the D.C. Armory. That wasn't here.
WWE only, Steve.
Has. Yeah. Oh, WWE only. Shit. No, go for it. I just remember Survivor Series more than any of them.
I'm usually pretty good at this. Backlash 2000.
Yep. It's a big one that Marcus and I just covered on WWE War recently. Very good show.
What was it? Capital Punishment 2011.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because that was the whole close to the whole killing, killing bin Laden. Mm-hmm. There was one after, what was the next one after that? 2000.
It's only one since then.
Okay.
Which is kind of crazy. But...
I'm trying to think.
All right. Well, here's the other one. Survivor Series 2009. Was there Cyber Sunday 07.
That's what it was. That's what I was thinking of. I knew there was one in 07. I couldn't think of it.
Battleground 2016. And then I think probably the best, Backlash is really good. But next to that, it's probably still better. SummerSlam 2005, obviously, was there. Yes. Hogan and Shawn. So.
Hogan and Shawn. Wow.
All right. City also hosted Saturday's main event 14 and 36. Also the home of Starrcade 1997 through 2000, as well as Capital Combat 1990. Also hosted AEW Battle of the Belts 4. City will be hosting numerous TV tapings, obviously. This TV taping here that we're covering was a debut show at this venue. On 5-9 WCW, the Midnights defeated the Rock and Rolls in a semifinal match to crown new U.S. Tag Team Champions. A week later, the Midnights defeated Barry Windham and Ronnie Garvin to win the vacant titles. On 5-26, the Rock and Rolls were set to face Rude and Fernandez, but Rude left the territory. Rock and Rolls were awarded the titles at a Phantom. On 6-6 Worldwide, the Midnights cut a promo wanting to win the World Tag Team titles, and it was announced that two teams would face at the Bash Tour. Following this taping, the two teams would continue to feud throughout the year, which culminated at Starrcade, where the Rock and Rolls would defeat the Midnights in a scaffold match. So why don't we go ahead and dive in? We're going to go ahead and live watch this match together. It is available on YouTube. Our good friend Monsoon Classic has it. Rock and Roll Express versus Midnight Express, July 11th, 1987. If you search that, you'll find it. Video's about 22 minutes long. So if you want to pause this, have at it. You can sync up with us, but we're going to go ahead and get started. You guys both ready?
Yep. Yep.
All right. Let's start in 3, 2, 1, play. And you get that classic Midnight's theme right out of the gate here as they come out. So do you have a crowd size on this, Sean?
No, I don't.
I'll check.
It might be in that write-up you sent.
It might be.
Let me look real quick.
I got to hear you, Scott, because Sean said it's actually 15,000.
Wow.
You know, the thing about Crockett, it really was that whole border. Like, you got both ends of the spectrum here with WWE. And if you love the wrestling, that's Crockett, but you love the flash of the WWF, it was a perfect combination. And again, twice a month you had it. And if you went to Baltimore, you got it four times a month. It was crazy.
Yeah.
So.
There you go. Kind of the rock and rolls. Crowd hot as always.
Two of my favorite pairs of tag belts ever. Both.
Yeah. Belts. The U.S. Both tag team titles are, they're just so unique. They're like different. Yeah. I'm a big belt mark too. Actually, if I look behind me, I have both the belts right behind me because these are both two of my favorite belts as well, Scott.
Yeah. Oh, I love those. I love those. I wish the current NWA would ditch those
other ones. Scott, I think I saw this ring announcer in some of your St. Patrick's Day festival.
Oh, come on.
That's our
quite the ensemble way. That guy's wearing there.
Yeah, I think he was dishing out the corned beef.
He was. Yep. He had a wig.
Is this when you think of NWA, like my first image is like this green ring apron, the dark background. Like this is like epitome of it.
Yeah. And you know, it's also for me, the Rock and Roll Express are kind of on the tail end of their.
Yeah.
They're, I mean, because in a couple months they lose the belts to Tully and Arn in. Like September, I think. Yeah. But they're kind of at the end of their.
Still over, though. I mean, the pop here is pretty crazy.
Oh, they're still over. They can still go. I was wondering. I always wondered that if Rude hadn't up and bailed, if they actually would have got the tag team titles back at some point or not. I just think they were forced the hand they had to.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody wants to see the Bull and Ivan Koloff as tag team champions.
No, so. Not really. Yeah, because most of 87, I mean, pretty much Tully and Arn have it. That's two straight years that, well, Tully and Arn technically did lose it, but that's two straight years that the NWA World Tag Team Champions had to lose because of leaving. Obviously here, the Rock and Roll's got it because Rude left. And then of course, Tully and Arn laid down for the Midnights because they were heading off to, in 88, they were heading off to WWF. So,
and then Midnights for the U.S. Tag Team Champions then, and we're one of the first teams to ever win the both belts at the same time. So.
Correct. And then they vacated them. They vacated the U.S. belts for Crockett's infamous tournaments that would take 5 months. And then I think the Fantastics won it in December.
Yeah.
This is what wrestling is missing these days. We need more funky bump musics.
Yeah. I agree. and what's funny is the Midnights only held it for like a month because then at the end of October, they drop them to the Road Warriors after the Road Warriors had turned heel and beat the shit out of Sting.
That is correct.
Yeah. I was always weird about that road. Speaking of Road Warriors on Landy on the history of WWE.com. You'd enjoy this, Sean, cause you probably saw it. There's actually a newspaper, ad for this show, on Landy's, site on the history of WWE.com. It's a picture of Flair and the Road Warriors. So speaking of the Road Warriors, apparently, according to this first debut, the first Crockett show ever in this building. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. That's what Steve has said in his notes.
Yeah, because normally they did Baltimore. They didn't do Landover until this show here.
Yeah. The Thunderfoots were here, just to let you know. So there were feet in the building.
I should have picked the Thunderfoot match. <Just kidding.
laughs> Well, they didn't wrestle barefoot. I guess we'll never have any Samoan matches on a Sean Kidd show because he doesn't want to look at anybody's feet.
What a damn name, though. Like, why? Hey, we're the Thunderfoots. Like, we're the, anyway. We're the
Thunderfeet.
Yeah, well, Gordon Lightfoot was popular. You know,
there so, you go.
That's true. Even, he was. Yes.
On this show.
Mind, that is, you know.
Yeah. On this show, Kendall Windham beat number one, and Rocky King, one of your favorite guys there, Sean, beat number two. So
we got a baby Earl here as the referee.
Yes.
Just before the plastic surgery.
Look how how young he looks.
Wow.
That's only it's less than a year away from that. That's
six
crazy.
Months. I mean, yeah, it was 6 months.
Yeah,
out.
6 months.
Yeah.
Beginning of February.
Crazy.
So the other, like, this whole card is really, really good. If you look at the whole card, this one stands out because it's a pretty big televised event. But the other big feud that was going on at the time was Dick Murdoch and Dr. Death, because Dick Murdoch had broke his arm. And so they actually had a match here tonight, too. This whole card in this one, out of any of the cards that you read, I would have picked this one we're looking at right here.
Yeah, so. According to the ad, it was a Texas Death match, too.
Mm-hmm.
According to the ad,
aired on TV, it aired on NWA Pro, their other syndicated show this weekend. Yeah,
just imagine being in this. The main event is the Horsemen against Dusty, Nikita, and the Road Warriors in a cage.
Yeah, it's basically a War Games match, but in a cage. It's not the War Games.
Sign me up like immediately. That does it. Then this match, Barry Windham and Big Bubba in a Louisville street fight. I don't know why Louisville, but. And then the Freebirds fought.
Oh, Ivan Cornette, Koloff. Right? Was that a Cornette thing, probably?
Yeah, maybe.
Oh,
with Big Bubba? Yeah, that makes sense. And then the Freebirds against Ivan Koloff and who was, of course, another made-up Russian guy who really wasn't Russian.
So that match is also on the NWA Pro syndicated that weekend. So four or five of these matches are actually on syndication that weekend. So.
Yep. Listen to these ticket prices. $8, $12, and $15. $50 for ringside. Fucking A, count me in. Ticket center locations, including the Cap Center and Hot Company stores, Hecht Company stores.
Oh yeah, I forgot about Hecht Company. I get all your tickets at Hecht Company. That's where we usually got our tickets. It's at Hecht
Company.
Yep.
Watch NWA Wrestling every Saturday and Sunday. I'm just looking at the ad here at 10 a.m. at UWF Wrestling every Saturday at 3 o'clock on FTY Channel 50.
Correct.
There we go.
Baltimore is channel 54. Yep.
So you went to Hecht Company. I used to go to Filene's. That's where I used to get my tickets. JR, what store?
Dude, you're really taking me back in some of these.
I know.
And
Filene's, man.
Jesus.
Filene's.
What was your? I think it was mainly JCPenney. We had Filene's too, though. So it might have been both. I don't know for sure.
I think those were the stores that were giving you freaking tickets.
Yeah.
You go to a little booth in the corner of the store. And
it's wild.
I used to get all my house shows, all my New Haven Coliseum house shows. Well, unless I bought them for the next month and then I would just go to the.
I remember when I went to the 94 Rumble, they sent us, like, if you were a magazine subscriber, you get a little thing in the mail, like months in advance. I was like, Royal Rumble's coming to Providence, mail in for tickets. Like, my uncle mailed a little pamphlet with like a check or whatever. And for like six tickets, and they shipped them back. Like, and I didn't know, like, you don't even know if you're getting them. I guess you just had to send this little pamphlet in, and then you wait to see if you got them. But that was crazy. I like to do it that way.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
I guess that was the early pre-sale. That was it.
So listen, we've probably seen at some point in time, at least for me and Scott, I don't know how much NWA you've watched, at least from this era. You've probably seen this match between these two 100 million times.
Oh yeah.
At this point. Yeah. But they're good. I mean, a lot of limb work in this match, to quote Chad Campbell, a lot of limb work.
A lot of limb work. What's funny is, as we see on the screen right now, if everyone's watching the same clip we are, the guy taping this is actually in California. That's even funnier.
Yeah.
The action's hot.
Yeah, they go slow paced, then they pick it up slow paced. They have a real rhythm that they usually follow. But I remember, like, that was the other thing, is between Crockett and WWF back then, like, you literally got main event matches on Crockett almost every weekend versus WWF. Yeah. You brought up the Young Stallions. I remember, like, Young Stallions taking on Demolition in 80, like, as that was considered a main event in WWF in 87, right? Because You had to Jobber to the
like
Stars.
Like Superstars and Challenge and shit would depend on like sweeps month, right? Like if you watch back, a lot of the Superstars in like February, May, November, like you'd kind of get like bigger stuff like weeks in a row would happen, and then they'd go quiet for a bit. But
Memorial Day, you get the Hulk Hogan syndicated match against Cowboy Bob. I remember that one in 87.
Yes.
You get the little Hogan match here and there.
I watched on All-American Wrestling. That's what I saw. It was on All-American Wrestling. Cowboy Bob match.
And then Primetime would have usually at least a match. I mean, they showed all the undercard shit from the house shows, and then they would at least have one was more great. Match.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, even like we talked about 6 weeks back, you actually had a title change with Honky beating Steamboat, which shocked the hell out of everybody at the time because he didn't have all like the dirt sheets and everything and didn't know anything that was going on. How the hell did this guy just beat Steamboat, you know?
Right. Yep. Looking at the Midnights, Sean, I the other day I was watching the November, I think it was 5th, 88 episode of the Saturday Night Show because it's on Peacock. And that was the first time you saw Paulie, Randy Rose, and Condrey.
Was it the attack?
Yeah, they attacked him in a match. Yeah, so that was because the Midnights kind of, even though they lost to the Road Warriors, because the Road Warriors were heels, the Midnights kind of stayed baby. You know, like after you know, because that they kind of turned baby to beat Arn and Tully, but yeah, this began the. MXE versus MXE that would dominate 19.
Randy Rose.
And I didn't even know there was an original Midnight. That's what I'm saying is this time frame is so cool because you didn't have background of anything. So everything is kind of like shock and awe a little bit. It was very different. And then again, you saw the original Midnight Express and they both looked 80 and you're like, okay, I'm trying to figure out what's happening here.
I know, like Condrey, like
Condrey's only like 30 something and he looked like he was 80.
And I loved Condrey. I don't want to say I liked him. It's weird because I like Stan Lane. He was obviously a better looking guy and, you know, probably a better wrestler. But I don't know. I always liked the Bobby Eaton, Condrey, Midnight Express, too. I don't know why.
Well, they had a more combination of like brawling and wrestling. Mm. Like Lane and Eaton are just prime, scientific, whatever. There's no brawling so much.
Right.
So that was a good balance with Condrey. But he just never fit. Like the Midnight Express, when I first saw him, they just like the overweight dudes that got out of their recliner a little bit, especially Condrey looked like he just walked out of a bar. So it just didn't fit like how they meshed a little bit. Yeah. It was weird.
Yeah. It is pretty funny.
Yeah. And even the Rock and Rolls to a degree. I mean, Robert Gibson's not like the most in shape dude either, right? So it's like, it's kind of unique. But Morton just fits the mold.
80s sexy is very different than modern sexy. Sean.
Yeah, but Orton fits the mold. Like, I'm sorry, not Orton. Morton fits the mold. Like, if you think Rock and Roll Express, he's got the whole thing going on.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's the closest.
Yeah.
I mean, Bobby's got the
sleeve. Stan Lane, I like them better.
Yeah.
But I like this version of the Midnights a lot better, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, I they're a better team. I agree with you 100%. They're a better team, but I don't know. For some reason, I always just like the Condrey. But no.
Oh, they're good. Don't get me wrong. But
no, but you're right. But you're totally right. Stan Lane made them a better team. I totally agree with you on that.
Rock and roll
Morton. Yeah, that was good.
I mean, for that time, you didn't see stuff like that back in those days.
Oof.
Future boat racing analyst Stan Lane. Didn't he do boat racing on ESPN or whatever?
Future WWF commentator, too.
Yep.
The 94, 95. I'm trying to remember when he actually became a
commentator. Yeah, he's not bad in WWF. He's like 93, 94. I didn't mind him. It was just him and Vince were tough because they're both doing like the... Stan was basically doing like Vince's son like gimmick, where he's just like just as, you know, gregarious and handsome and everything else.
Well, Rock and Roll Express are wrestling at WrestleMania weekend this year.
Yeah. Speaking of 94, they were in WWF at that time, too.
I think it's a GCW event they're wrestling at this year. I can't remember.
Probably, if anywhere.
They're teaming with Richard's Ricky Carey's Morton's son. It's a 6-man, I think. I'd have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure he's in the NWA now with his son. I mean, Scott knows this.
Yeah.
I'm going to make the NWA jokes right now, Scott. I promise.
Let me tell you something. Southern Six. I mean, they're great. They're a great group of heels. You know, I think they're pretty
Southern
they're pretty
shits.
Yeah.
Sorry, listen, I'll give you one thing.
Shower doors and get paid. They don't get paid in fucking stolen bank robbery Scott, money. And
I'll give you one. Hey, GCW draws way better than NWA. I'll say that.
It does, and more Scott. Consistently. But listen, I'll give you one thing. Kerry Morton, there's an upside to Kerry Morton. There is. Kerry Morton.
He's the Lance Von Erich of his day.
Yeah.
No, I think there is an upside with him if they actually booked him right. He's not bad. He's been in GCW a couple times, and he's a pretty good shit dick heel. I like him on there.
He is. So. He's a better heel than he is. Yeah. He is a better heel than he is a babyface.
So. He's easy to hate.
Yeah.
Well, when your dad is like the ultimate babyface, so I guess you have to rebel a little
bit. Yeah, and him acting like a heel just makes no sense. And he's also looks like his grandmother, not grandfather at this point. But I mean,
let's not forget his run as Richard Morton when he was with the York Foundation.
If GCW doesn't call one of the shows that they're on, like something like Under the Glass Table, like I'll lose all faith in GCW.
Bring in Jimmy Valiant or Jimmy
right Valiant. In their wheelhouse. It's like perfect. GCW Under the Glass Table featuring the Rock and Roll Express and Jimmy Valiant.
I guarantee you that will happen at some time. They will name it that.
And then they'll like do a spot where like he's under the table and like Ricky Morton gets thrown through it, or Gibson. Was it Gibson or Morris? I forget which one it was that walked in. Gibson.
I don't know, but if anybody was going to do it, it would be GCW. Yes. For sure.
Pretty much.
Because Billy isn't doing that booking.
No.
Well, not with the CW paying him now.
Not Billy, what's his name?
Billy Corgan.
Yeah. Billy, no, that was my Lex Luger joke.
It's like
the PTV Saturday,
Super Brawl Saturday something. Yeah. Billy, what's his name?
Shirts are too tight.
All right, so we got 6 minutes left. So this is the typical where you have Gibson taking all the heat before they get the hot tag from Morton. Yeah, this is their formula almost every match.
Ramp up. Yeah, king of the hot tag.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who does a better hot tag of the Ricks? Ricky Morton or wee Ricky Martel coming in hot off the tag from Tito and Zink?
You know, I really like Strikeforce. They're a really good team. And again, I'm going to age myself. They were a team in the AWA like 5 years before, and they were amazing then. I really like Rick Martel. It's hard for me. I'm going to have to go with Morton just because that's more my wheelhouse of how much I've watched, but there's a case for Martel. Oof. For sure.
Well, I can tell you one thing Morton doesn't do is the little punches and the little leg kicks like Rick Martel.
Oh, right. He does a lot of this too. Because,
That's my name dropped to Marty Sleaze. Was it, tag team's back again. Him or our good friend Kelly Nelson. Wee Ricky Martel when he come in and do the hot tag against
Alex. I enjoyed that show. It was a good show. The podcast.
Oh, awesome. If anyone that loves like 80s WWF tag team wrestling, if you go in the archives, it's on the Pro Wrestling Only sound. It's still they're still there. Yeah. Kelly Nelson and Marty are both great, and they just went through the whole 80s tag scene feud by feud, and like the episodes
it's really good.
On Strikeforce and Islanders, like some of my favorite stuff. Like they were great on those. Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
I'm going to blow a future episode of Territorial too on so I do Pile Driver, the album. Mm-hmm. And what I do is I look at all the songs and then pick a match to match up with the song. So one of the matches I pick is Strikeforce versus Islanders for Girls in Cars. So that'll be on there. So
they should get a good. Oh Jesus, that was an awful fall by Gibson.
Yeah, it sure was. I was savage. Look at him. Look like he's all contorted.
Yeah, that was ugly.
That was
why did he hang out of the apron? Why didn't he just fall?
I don't know what he's doing.
I don't know. He's really hurt.
Is it like the Royal Rumble where you don't want to not hit the ground?
Yeah, I think he's really fucked up. He like landed on his knees on the concrete.
Yeah, that was a savage fall.
Well, you should get a good wee Ricky Martel in that match that you listen to for Territorial.
So oh, it's a very good spoiler. That's a good match, shocker, but it's a good match. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're going tight on this heat segment because we only got a few minutes left here in the match.
It's gone fast. Like,
yeah.
Oh.
I think this was the first year of the green. I think 87 is when they debuted the green apron. I think before that, they would do the apron that like current NWA has, except there's.
And then towards the end, they go to a red apron when they start like doing what is it? What is the when they combine that in a UWF? I forget what they call themselves. It's like a whole nother branding thing they could do. But it changes to a red apron.
Yeah, I feel like Pro had their own apron or something. I know what you're talking about, but yeah, I felt like one of those other shows kind of had like a red background. And,
mm-hmm.
But
count of two.
Yeah, this match has been really good. There are only a couple of There was one there was one kick that Stan like totally missed Ricky's head, but or Robert's head. Oh, that was bad.
It's kind of kick him in his kick to the head eyes.
Hey, you see Blatter there at ringside in his red PWI t-shirt taking pictures.
Now we're going late into this commercial here.
Who is that with all that? Is that Apter?
That is Apter, yes. Yeah. That's Bill Apter.
He looked really big to be Apter, but yeah. The excitement continues, but we only got what?
It's tight.
Like a minute left here. 2 minutes left, yeah.
It's quite the shocking ending when you watch it as far as what happens. Might have a little bit of dusty book, little bit of dusty booking happening at the end of this match. The other great thing about this match, it doesn't have damn Tommy Young being the ref. Tommy Young ruins everything.
Earl's been good. I mean, he's barely involved, which is nice.
I don't know why they love Tommy Young.
Thing is, listen, the good thing about back in the day, we didn't see Tommy Young matches every single week. Like, we can go on and watch it all now. Thank God, because it would have ruined the product 100%.
No, he only ruined the main event of pay-per-views that you had to spend money on.
Yeah.
He didn't ruin the free
matches. Half the wrestlers do in this time frame.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, so we got the hot tag.
Yeah, here we go. We're going into the Pier Sixer here. Katie bar the door. There you go. This is a real bump.
There goes the ref bump. Could have been Tommy Young.
That was a good one, though, actually. It was pretty smooth.
Yeah.
Wow, and Earl like flew out of the ring. Normally it's a turnbuckle hit, but he bailed out of the ring.
Yeah. I mean, it was a trope. They always had a bunch of ref bumps in the NWA, but they really took some good ones. They took good ones, though.
Big Bubber.
Oh, here we go. Future Big Boss Man coming up right here. There it is.
Bubba.
Bubba Man Slam. Mickey Bowen's dead.
I was kind of hoping that Bubba would be able to keep his hat on. That would have been cool.
Yeah, he was a big dude.
Big dude. Around. And actually, I think they might have taped it already. He just recently lost the UWF title, and it wasn't that long before this, I think.
It was after this because it was on that show.
It was after this. So that's weird because they don't even advertise him as a UWF champion or anything on this show.
No. I know. It's weird.
Yeah.
There you go. Midnight's won the belts, thanks to Big
Bubba. That's right. Yeah, Midnight's won the belts. You're right, because Bubba defends against Barry in the street fight.
Yeah,
yep.
In the street fight. Right. But it was on the actual 11th that he lost to Dr.
No, here we go.
All right, so we got new tag team champions.
Yeah.
Or do we?
Well, there you go. And you got the other ref in there, so you know how this goes.
So you got the bell bottoms.
The old dusty booking 101.
It either happened that night or it would happen the next week. Dusty finishes had 7 day shelf lives.
There you go. All right. What'd you throw in that match there, Sean? What's your grade?
It's a good match. I don't 100% think it's like the best one for me. I love the WrestleWar 90 match, which is really, really good. I'd still go good 3.5 on it. It's a good Rock and Roll Express and Midnights in this time frame couldn't do any wrong. I mean, every match they did was freaking good. I was going to
say 3.25 somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. I would give it 3.25. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they all look pretty good. I don't think I'd have a star. I actually thought Big Bubba looked really good at the end with the interference. I thought that was well done. He was
He was really good at this point in time, as for as big as he was, which is why he got to the WWF, obviously. So
Yeah. That's a Vince guy right there.
All right, so that'll do it for our trip to Washington, D.C. It'll be the best trip to D.C. we take in 2024. Actually, but this will be the hottest one for sure. So be sure to check it out if you haven't seen it. And I want to thank you for joining us, Sean. It's always good to have you here. Like I said, you can check you out every other Friday on Territorial and the North South Connection. Also, both of you are frequent guests on 902 and NOSO, our Beverly Hills 902 podcast series. It's its own feed. You can search that. We're into early season 3, and you both made recent appearances, so be sure to check that out. As well as everything else at the Place of the Nation Wrestling Network and North South Connection YouTube channel. Subscribe. Don't miss any of us. Scott will be back in 2 weeks with a brand new guest and a brand new town. This one, I think, is very timely to where we're headed. Just under 3 weeks from the time we're going to be taping this. It'll all get together. So we're looking forward to that. And Sean, we'll have you back with a new town down the road. Until then, check you out Territorial. Scott, see you in a couple weeks. And take care.
Peace.